Hey!
You're listening to Avid Research.
Avid Research.
Avid Research.
An Australian STEM podcast.
Where we answer the questions you never quite got around to asking.
Welcome back to the show, team. My name's Amelia, and today we're doing a bit of a plot twist episode. We still have another person on the line, but we're going to be doing a bit of a like switcheroo as to who gets asked questions. So that'll be obviously fun and, you know, not at all unsettling for me. So welcome to the show, Emily.
Hello, Amelia. Great to be here.
That's always a really good start. I think to give this whole episode some kind of context, though, we still need to explain who you are. So maybe let's just start with, what is your job?
Excellent. Yeah, I'd love to. So I'm Emily, co-founder and partner at Cruxes Innovation. What is Cruxes Innovation and why, you know, am I the co-founder of this organization? So Cruxes exists because we're great believers of the impact potential of the amazing work that is done from researchers, scientists, all across Australia. And we believe that there's a contribution that we can make to helping researchers, scientists unlock that great impact potential of their capability to solve the many, many wicked problems that we're facing across society today. And so we exist to work alongside researchers, innovators, ecosystem leaders to build collaborative partnerships between research, industry, community groups, and government to solve these pressing real-world problems.
So moving out beyond those beautiful silos that we have so carefully curated, breaking them down and seeing what can be made when we sort of like smush people together.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess what we've been really fortunate to have the opportunity because of the type of work that we do, working alongside so many researchers, so many scientists all across Australia. Today, we've had the great privilege of working with about 34 universities all across Australia. And every year, we kind of get to sort of work and then coach between sort of 500 to 700 researchers at universities, at research institutions. And it's just amazing, just absolutely mind-blowing in terms of the type of really impactful, really kind of just fascinating research that's happening, you know, all across Australia in our neighborhoods, in different places. And, you know, I have the best job because I have to live vicariously through the amazing intellectual capability of others.
And there's some random and very, very cool stuff that goes on. So Emily and I both get to talk to like really cool people and at the cutting edge and find out what they're doing. What are some of the conversations that have been bubbling up over the last couple of years, or like some themes that have been occurring that you think might be interesting to people?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is actually kind of where this idea of doing a reverse podcast or reverse kind of, you know, switcheroo session came about, because I guess a big part of our work is working with researchers who are thinking about and navigating, you know, from their kind of career perspective, how do they take their capabilities? Sometimes it's how do they take their ideas and really make a difference in the world? And one thing that we're noticing, particularly, you know, in the last year or so, with so much of the change that's happening, you know, in higher education, in research kind of sector, where we're sort of having more and more conversations with scientists and researchers who are really thinking about, is staying in academia or is staying in the research sector the best way to, you know, bring about the type of change, the type of contribution that they can make? They can see their skills, they can see their expertise being made, and you know, being thinking about sort of how do you make those transitions? You know, if you are considering moving out of one industry, one kind of sector into another sector, there's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of risk involved in really exploring that and you know, quite a daunting task, if you will, to be exploring that. And, you know, it was really kind of quite fortunate. We, you know, Amelia, we were sort of talking about, you know, this kind of, I guess, trend that we're noticing around scientists and researchers who the number of them who are really kind of contemplating on how do they navigate this potential kind of transition, or really just a shift in where they want to spend most of, you know, their waking hours, you know, do they want to continue to kind of stay in the same kind of area, sector, industry, or maybe it is a time to really think about exploring the world outside or the world beyond where they're currently at. And in fact, this is actually where you're kind of contemplating it as well. So you're right in the thick of kind of exploring, living and breathing this uncertainty, and thought, well, we got to make sure your story, your work in progress story is going to, we're capturing that and we're sharing that with our listeners. So that's where the starting point of this conversation. And, you know, obviously, you know, I think it'd be awesome to have you share a little bit about where things are at for you and you know, how did you come to be in this kind of, you know, sitting in the uncertainty at the moment?
And honestly, I have so many opinions about like career transition and all the risks and perceived risks, all that sort of stuff. But that's a, probably a conversation for another day. You're rarely slamming a door behind you is probably the main thing that I'd like to get out. But yeah, so I've spoken to like however many, 100 and something researchers over and people in STEM over the years. And there's a lot of conversations that happen when the microphone's turned off, particularly whether it's with PhD students and postdocs who can see a really clear line in their, like, in their immediate future as to like that change is coming, or people who are just really tired of contracts, or there's a whole lot of reasons that people might consider change. But getting people to talk about that in a recorded space is really, really hard because it involves being incredibly vulnerable. And like, it's really easy to say something, particularly if you're employed and you're considering something else. Like, yeah, you don't want to really annoy your employer.
Could I, your current role?
That's fair. No shade. And so there's just this sort of like, I feel a lack of, you know, people will happily talk 3 years down the track about a career transition, but actually talking about it while you're going through it is quite difficult because there's a lot of, I don't know. And yeah, there's a bunch of reasons why we might not want that to go on the record. So I am here sacrificing myself for the greater good.
Amelia, the sacrificial lamb. For the greater good of all of us.
I was like, I'll do it. Like, I can't. It is unkind of me to ask anyone else who is like going through an uncertain period to like go, come on air. If like, I'll do it. And, you know, maybe there's a chance that someone out there listens to this and is like, oh, I am also feeling deeply uncertain about my future. And, you know, you can listen to any number of stories that will tell you it'll work out, because it will. But it's also, I think, probably kind of nice to hear from someone else who's like, ugh.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's why we're here, is to talk about my like life uncertainty.
Yeah. And I think, you know, definitely want to dive into kind of where you're at. But I think maybe if we start with like, you know, often what we notice is it's easy for us to go from one job to another, to a job to another. Right, you know, the moment that we notice, okay, change is coming, you know, typically we will be thinking about, okay, how, you know, what's my next job, and how do I kind of get as quick as possible, you know, sort of bounce from one role to another, because, you know, sitting in that uncertainty space, sitting in that sort of unknown territory is terrifying for you as you individually, but it's also really difficult for those around you, you know, in terms of how they support you, how they, you know, the type of, I guess, interactions that they have with you. And so, you know, it takes a lot of courage to sort of give yourself the permission to hold the space to say, okay, let me actually step back and really think about what options should I be considering, and how do I make the best decision, you know, about my role, my career, I'm going forward. And so, Emil, I'd love to hear for you, you know, what was it that sort of, I guess, motivated you to want to pause and really give yourself the space to sit in this uncertainty and this uncomfort zone?
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting question. And I firstly have to like deeply acknowledge the financial privilege that allows this to happen, right? Like, while there's a whole lot of pressures that encourage us to move, to bounce from job to job, like, ultimately the core one for a lot of people is just they need to be able to pay rent, buy vegetables, that sort of stuff. And having, like, there is a privilege that comes from being able to actually take the time. So acknowledging that, and I like to think there's ways of, like, squiggling it in, even if you don't have that privilege. But yeah, so starting with that acknowledgement, I think there was a couple of sort of trigger points for me. One was that, like, my last role, for a bunch of reasons, wasn't working out. I was really quite stressed about it. And it was compounded by being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes just over a year ago. So having, like, a genuinely life-changing diagnosis dropped on me. Yeah. Sort of 6 months after that, just being like, actually, things really do need to change. And it's one of the benefits that's come out of that diagnosis is it's sort of a card you can play to be like, this thing's happened, I actually need a bit of space. Yeah. You shouldn't need that, but I have it. Weird chronic illness card. But yeah, that's those two things, and just sort of being like, I have been told particularly about a lot of potential medical complications down the track, and it just sort of starts making you think a little bit about, like, if I was to only have another 5 or 10 years of, like, good quality work left in me, how do I actually want to spend it? And obviously, ideally, you'd sort of think a bit about, bit like that anyhow, but it definitely was a good push for me. And that then triggered, like, a bunch of reflection and sort of looking back at my own career history and just seeing that it was sort of like 1 year, 2 year stints at different companies that were, did have that sort of ping pong ball vibe to it. And I was like, that's like, the cycle is quite ridiculous of, like, being stressed about applying for jobs, crushed when I don't get the jobs, taking with, like, desperate excitement the job that I do get offered, having sort of like 6 to 9 months of hope, and then like 3 months of trying to work out how I'm going to leave the job. This is not good. Something needs to change. And there's, like, a bunch of ways that that might be reflected in different, for different people and in different industries, whether it's contracts, whether it's, like, literally bouncing between jobs. Like, I don't think it's necessarily that uncommon to be sort of, like, repeating the same mistake. And I had a bit of a, like, externally imposed circuit breaker, but I think having something nudge you to be like, oh, this is a repeating pattern, something should change, that was what sort of really, I guess, started the process.
Yeah, fantastic. And that sort of process in terms of, you know, the note, I'm curious, and like, when, obviously, you know, let's kind of like, there's definitely the health kind of, you know, event, which probably elevated the, like, we need to seriously have a consideration. But I think you also mentioned that you kind of started to notice and acknowledge that, you know, change is needed. I'm just curious, you know, whether there were, like, what were the kind of conversations or things that you noticed that sort of, you know, were little hints that started to sort of drop in and really sort of, I guess, encourage you to be, could it be kind of, I guess, a bit more proactive? Part of the reason is, you know, we often, you know, work with a lot of researchers, particularly early career researchers, that, you know, have 12-month, you know, sort of contract, rolling contract. In fact, I think the longest one I've come across is a researcher who's had 12-month contracts. And, you know, it's just incredible to sort of go, wow, like, as you said, you know, when you're on a 12-month contract, you get 3 months just to, like, learn what you're doing, maybe three to six months to actually do the job, and then you're sort of worried about what next. And so, you know, it amazes me how you can keep putting yourself through that sort of, you know, sort of hamster wheel. And so, yeah, super curious to hear kind of, for you, like, were there any signs that you went, okay, I'm not going to jump in, I I'm not going to jump into the next hamster wheel. I'm really going to sort of, you know, give myself the permission to actually pause and really think about this. I'm just curious in terms of, like, personally, were there anything that was in your environment that, you know, you're noticing?
I think it's a really interesting one, because you're like, what you're looking for are symptoms. Like, what are the symptoms that you should, like, really pause and have a good think? I think we are amazingly good at grinding through all sorts of symptoms that are really good signs that you should take a break or do something different. And there's, like, books about the benefit of grinding. Like, you should grind yourself into dust for your employer kind of thing. And it is, like, when you're in particularly 1-year contracts, that is such a hard cycle to break, because, like, you're constantly, like, yeah, the idea of not applying for the next role is almost impossible. So a big one for me was just, like, waking up every morning and really not wanting to go to work. Like, just, like, having that sick feeling and just not wanting to, not getting any kind of warm, fuzzy feeling about any kind of success or anything like that at work. Then, like, if you're lucky and you have people close to you who are sort of exposed to you, they're, like, a bit sick of you being snickety because you're not enjoying your job. Like, that's a symptom. But then we get used to people being snickety as well, and we think that's just who they are, and it's actually because, like, they're burnt out and they're not doing something that feeds them. Mm-hmm. And a big part for me was also that I had things outside of work that I just desperately wanted to be doing that weren't my job. And so having this huge pull externally and not feeling that at all at work, I think, is pretty massive. And so an example of that I can see for a lot of researchers would be if your pull is always towards the science communication part, and that's not actually really kind of part of your job, but, like, that's the thing that you're drawn to and getting energy from and that sort of thing, like, mm-hmm. that might be a symptom that pure research isn't the path. Yeah, so there's a lot of things, and we're really, really good at squishing them down and being like, that's not important or whatever. But yeah, when you're snickety and you just don't want to, that was a big one for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, kind of, you know, now you are kind of, you know, living and breathing the, you know, what am I doing? What choices do I have? How, I guess, you know, from a, if we sort of go in a little bit more touchy-feely, what does a, you know, on a regular day, what does it feel like for you right now? And, you know, how do you describe this experience that you're having at the moment?
In general, I just feel a lot happier and lighter, and I'm nicer to be around. So that's good. I think it really oscillates, like, how I feel about exploring, like, what I'm going to do next. Like, on a good day, you can sort of be excited and hopeful and be like, there's a whole world of opportunities. Yay. And then other days, it's very easy to get quite annoyed at yourself for not having it all figured out yet. And I haven't had a lot of opportunity to talk to people about it, because it's just sort of a conversation that's really hard to have. Often people, if they are interested in chatting at all, just really want to talk about, like, let's solve this problem. We must solve it, and we will find the job on LinkedIn that you can apply for.
Yeah, let's take out our phone. Let's, like, you know, start, yeah, like, Googling, and
I can find this job.
Yeah, let's swipe right for. You sort of go straight into, and again, people, as you said, like, most of the people, because they want to help, they really want to genuinely, they're seeing you in a state of, you know, stress or you know, uncomfortable in this, and they're wanting to help. But I think that's really, I think, a great insight around the when you are, you know, sort of in that state of really trying to figure out where to next, the people around you and how they support you, how they respond to you, can make a really big difference. Because I think what you mentioned just now in terms of, you know, that sense of like, you know, sort of criticism that you have for yourself, that like, oh, like, why haven't you figured this out yet? You know, like, you should be in your next, you know, role already. And I think it's a really interesting sort of phenomenon and sort of, I guess, observation that we actually also, you know, sort of have when we're working with researchers is often, you know, researchers, you know, in the area of research, often you are, you know, the most intellectually capable, or you're often seen as the expert, right? You probably grew up being the top of the class, you know, pretty much academically gifted, and kind of, you know, sort of, you know, got it all figured out. And so, you know, that can be a really big stressor in terms of the expectations that you have on yourself and others have on you. And so that's really interesting in terms of like the particular, the extra, I guess, pressure that, you know, researchers and you know, people in this area may have, maybe compared to, you know, the average Joe who's around. But, you know, I think just diving into that a little bit more in terms of like, for you, when you do get into that state, if you will, what, you know, what's going on for you?
Like, other than just the, you should, you know, you're 30 something, you should really know what you're doing with your life by now thing. I think there's a lot of, there's so many little pressures and so many little narratives around of like the ones that I hold of where you've loved science since you were so little, you should be working in science and technology, and so there's sort of these external things that people have told you that you love and you do, and so sometimes you then have like the guilt of like, well, why do I not love that enough to want to do it every day? And I think, yeah, that's sort of an interesting sort of challenging one to work through. And then there's just like there's other things that people will be like, but what about your super? Like, your super's the most important thing. You're not paying into your super, the world will end. Super's more important than mental health. Okay. And then there's just like, we don't like not knowing in general. As a society, we like to have our five-year plan and have the next step and like have this sort of certain thing that you can stand on, particularly with our careers. Like, I think careers and romantic relationships often have like, are like these core things that you need to have sort of worked out and be solid for you to be able to step forward in any other part of your life. Because, you know, they're two of the things that people will like default to thinking about and asking about you. Like, first question be, what do you do? And if you can't answer that with something that doesn't sound unhinged, then like the whole conversation is off to a really bad start. And so it's wanting to have that really sort of stable base to be standing on and working from. But the thing that then helps me not rush is be like, well, it's actually been worse when I had the career and I had that sort of like plan in front of me and it didn't work and it didn't resonate and it wasn't the right one for me. That was actually way worse and way more unstable than being uncertain.
Yeah.
And remembering that is the trick.
That's interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like there's almost kind of like there's a particular almost like a loop that helps you sort of hold, in some ways, like hold the course to say, hey, this is incredibly stressful and, you know, kind of, I guess, maybe sometimes frustrating, and there's lots of kind of, you know, emotions that's going on. It sounds like there's a little kind of, I guess, almost like this little helper on the side of your, you know, your shoulder that's like, oh, hang on, there's a reason why I'm here. You know, there's a reason why I'm choosing to stay here. And it is so that, you know, I can not repeat what, you know, what has happened in the past.
Yeah, exactly. And curating that is quite challenging but worthwhile, so that, because if you can hold, I hope that if I can like hold this uncertainty for a bit longer, I will be able to sort of like crack the thing that's the right next step for me, so that I don't, you know, hit 60, 70 and be like, I've spent all of that sort of scrambling in my career and just not really being happy. And to come back, actually, one of your earlier questions, like what was a sort of a symptom that things needed to be broken or changed, not broken, but was this deep frustration that I didn't feel like I was contributing as much as I could to the world. And it just didn't, it wasn't lining up. I felt like I had X amount of energy and like 10% of it was being used and it was just getting lost along the way. And I was like, that needs to be channeled better. It's not right.
Yeah.
That's an important one.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's like, there's, you know, quotable out of the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's that, I, for me at least, you know, that really resonates, and that really certainly is something that is quite common with research, with kind of, you know, researchers and science and technology people that we talk to, is that it is that sort of sense of like miss opportunity, but it's kind of like, you know, you've got all these you've got sort of all these energy and potential that's not getting, like it's getting wasted, or it's not getting kind of fully utilized, and that there's almost that list, there's like this residue of like, if only there was other ways to direct that energy, or that kind of curiosity, or that sort of, you know, capability. And it sounds like that was something that was kind of bubbling away, but, you know, kind of just got to the surface, and it was just kind of, you know, much more front of mind.
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of ways that can like show up for a person, but I think when that is too far out of whack, that's when things need to change.
Yeah. And I mean, now that you've been kind of giving your the courage to sit in this kind of uncertainty and that's the unknown, if you will, like the middle of the unknown. So curious to sort of hear, what have you noticed about yourself? What have you learnt about, you know, how you've, you know, sort of, yeah, where you're at? Like what did you sort of find some new insights about, kind of, you know, your preferences or things like that? Just, yeah.
It's been good to have some sort of space, yeah, to get to know yourself, kind of. But to do that does obviously involve work. And so part of that for me has just been like daily journaling to get stuff out of my head. That's been really helpful. But asking myself questions and then writing like half a page to answer that question. Like I went back through like all the jobs that I've had in the last 10 years and wrote them all down, and then wrote down like what did I enjoy about that job? What did I not enjoy about that job? Like, and to start looking for patterns there. And so that was really beneficial. That was like surprisingly interesting. It was like, one of the things that I discovered was a really common factor for me is I just didn't enjoy working where things were intangible. And so working on software where it's never actually a tangible thing just really doesn't work for me. I want to work with physical things. And it's like, without giving yourself some space to do some hard reflecting, you're not like, so that was sort of quite interesting. But yeah, going through each job, you're like in quite a lot of detail. What did I learn in that role? All those sorts of things. That's, yeah, been really helpful. So while technically I haven't been working, I've been doing a lot of like, trying to get to know myself better so that you can then make better decisions in the future.
Yeah. Actually, I just realized the question I should have probably asked is like, what does one do when one is sitting in this you know, uncertainty? You know, what do you do? You know, and as you said, it's from the outside, people might go, well, they just sit around and, you know, bumming around. But actually, there's a lot of work that actually is involved in the holding that space.
And I haven't found like a really good structured approach to it yet. I'm like super open to suggestions. The closest that I found is the Life Design book by Person One and Person Two. That's a really good like starting point for investigating like what your personal philosophy of work is, what your personal philosophy of life is, doing a bit of a check-in as to how your life's going. And then one of the sort of really fun activities that I find is doing three-year planning of three totally different life paths. And so you sort of can, well, like, then that's really helpful for breaking out of this track that I'm on is the only track. So the first investigation you do or first plan you do is based on, like, if you continue in your current plan, on your current track. Second one is, what if your career, like the entire career just disappeared, what would you do? And then the third one is, if money was no object, what would you do? And how do those whole life plans for multiple years, how would they play out? And so I've been using sort of tools like that to help structure like self, I guess, analysis. But yeah, I haven't had a huge amount of luck finding like the right tool for me right now.
Yeah, but it sounds like, you know, part of it is there is an element of experimentation that is involved. You know, we're talking just before about like how much there's trial and error that actually really happens, and you know, if I mean, there are countless, you know, books, resources around, you know, life coaching and life counseling, but often, you know, you do need to try these different things and give yourself that opportunity to sort of, you know, ask yourself a different question. And as you say, you know, be, you know, even just run thought experiments, not necessarily, you know, you need to sort of dive straight in, but almost, you know, run a number of these different thought experiments just to see what, you know, what comes back. And sometimes it surprises you, like, you know, you kind of go, wow, I didn't expect me to come up with this answer. And that, you know, by itself is quite insightful for you to then sort of dive into and explore. And I guess for this process, you know, as you said, it can be quite a lonely kind of journey, if you will, right? Because this is something that you know, it is something deeply personal that you're, you know, sort of, you know, going through. And for you, how, you know, have there been any sort of, I guess, support or you know, how have others been helpful or not so helpful, if you will, in this kind of time period of yours?
That's an interesting, spicy question. I'm really lucky that my immediate family is super supportive. I think without that, it would probably be, it could easily be impossible. And so that really helps. I think when it comes to friends, there is the whole spectrum of helpful to not helpful, which is quite interesting. So I think the least helpful is just being like, so what's your next job? And there's no conversation outside of that. That isn't really a conversation. It's just sort of, yeah, not helpful. It's helpful for me knowing that I have a number of friends whose partners have made like similar choices to step back while they work out their next thing, while they work on their own projects. Having that be across genders is really good. It's not just women doing that. People just being open to being curious and happy to have a chat or not have a chat, depending on where you're at. And I've also had a handful of people sort of share their story of like them just not really knowing what to do. And that's just really heartening. You're like, oh, it's, yeah, like it's not just me. So that's what this podcast is for, you if you don't know what you're doing. So you know it's not just you as well, because I found it really nice when someone else was like, oh no, it's not just you. Yeah. And then you've got like really career-driven friends who are like, the next thing has to be like the shiny career. And you've got like the super chill beach bum friend who's like, go enjoy your life. And so it's good to have a spectrum of friends because you can find balance in there too. So yeah, it's really interesting. Like everyone tries to help in some way and it's really hit and miss, but obviously what helps me will not be what helps someone else too. So.
And particularly I'm thinking about sort of, you know, as you said, you know, that we're hopefully this kind of episode, this kind of podcast will resonate with, you know, some of our kind of listeners who either, you know, you have intentionally given yourself the space to be pausing, you know, sitting in that uncertainty, or you might be still in a role and you are kind of secretly thinking about, you know, these changes that need to happen. Either way,
there'll also be potentially people who didn't choose to be out of a role and had it thrust upon them. That happens too. We're not in the great whatever it was firing that happened.
Yes.
2 years ago, but yeah, there's still plenty of people who didn't pick this.
Absolutely. And that's, yeah, they're definitely
different, obviously, but
yeah. And they're, you know, all of them are, you know, in that scenario where they will come across a range of, you know, friends and relatives that are really helpful and not so helpful. And I mean, in sort of your experience to date, how have you managed the not so helpful friends? Because I suspect that they, you know, won't know that they're not so helpful. How did you manage that?
Usually a very gentle subject change is the easiest, which is probably a cop-out, but if the conversation isn't coming from a place where they are able to understand, it's not a worthy conversation of like continuing to invest in, and it's better to pivot if at all possible. You know, when people send you job links and that sort of stuff, that to jobs that are just not the right one, you don't, and this, I wish I could give myself this advice back in the day, but you do not actually have to apply for that job. You can just say thank you. You do not need to spend 2 days writing selection criteria for a job you don't want. Like, people want to help and they will do it in all kinds of ways. Had anyone offer me a job yet, that'd be different. But yeah, the sending of job links, you do not have to apply for the wrong job.
But I think that's a really great, you know, sort of like genuine tip and advice, because, you know, when you are in this state of uncertainty, you are also incredibly vulnerable, right? You know, you don't necessarily have the same type of confidence and that grounding when, you know, you are, you know, in a role or in a job. And so, as you said, often these really helpful, you know, sort of friends, suggestions, and advices, it might feel like you are, you know, you feel obliged to sort of take it all in, right? Whether or not they're helpful or not helpful. But I think that's a really great, you know, suggestion is you can say no, you can hold the space and you can kind of say, look, appreciate that, but this is, you know, I'm going to change the conversation. You know, I'm going to actually hold my ground and, you know, politely move on from this discussion. And yeah, so I think that's a really great advice.
So, and in that, the thing that has taken me however many years to work out is like understanding the difference between the thing that someone is literally saying or sending you and the spirit that comes behind it. The spirit behind it is the important thing. They care, they want to support you, they want you to do well, they believe in you. That's the thing to try and take on board, not the actual way that it's delivered, because mostly people will deliver it badly and that's just really unfortunate. Not mostly, but like more often than they'd want. Like, people want you to be safe, they want you to be happy, they believe in you and believe that you can succeed and change the world and that sort of thing. And they have their experience and their tools that they then use to try and support you with that. Particularly now where the world is such a different place, the careers are so different than they were 10 and 20, 30 years ago, those tools don't necessarily apply, but the spirit behind them is the important thing. And I'm saying this to myself as much as I'm saying it to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess for just on that as well, has there any for you kind of in, you know, with where you're at now, what's made things kind of more challenging or kind of less challenging? Well, what's been kind of, you know, sort of, I guess, helpful overall for you in, you know, navigating and sitting in this uncertainty at the moment?
I think the most helpful thing has been being kind of structured and strategic where I can about, like, really being thorough and honest with myself. So rather than sticking with sort of shallow or assumed narratives about what's happened in the past, like actually digging into it and trying to look into, like, investigating your own career like a little detective and trying to do that as impartially as possible. Yeah, and being quite thorough about it, that's been really helpful. I think there's a lot of unhelpful things I could do, like ruminate on bad stuff, and you know, you might have a day or two to do that. You can throw yourself a pity party, but you still have to pick yourself back up. And yeah, I think a lot of us really like structure, even if we don't acknowledge it. And so giving yourself your own structure is quite important.
And in fact, you know, particularly for many of the people that kind of, you know, that we get to work with researchers, you know, I mean, it's in some ways it's a little bit like giving, I mean, it might give you sort of terror, sort of nightmares, but it's a little bit like putting yourself through back in your PhD, you know, where yeah. You do yeah. have to, you know, give yourself that structure and sort of, you know, give yourself that accountability to sort of continue to, you know, work through these questions, have these kind of, you know, kind of self-reflection kind of opportunities, because as you said, it can be easy to sort of, you know, be stuck in a bit of a spiral and, you know, not be able to sort of pull yourself out. And as you said, you know, that's really where knowing who are the helpful, you know, friends, relatives, resources can be really, really, you know, useful to sort of just give yourself that ability to get yourself back on, you know, back on track, if you will, whether, you know, whether, no, even though you don't know where that track is leading you towards, but having that sort of, I guess, structure can really be helpful.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. I'm curious if you've seen any like commonalities as well for people, like what helps them move through it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think certainly, you know, we've had the opportunity to work with probably a lot more researchers that are, you know, sort of secretly thinking about this, and they're not telling their managers today. They're having conversations with us, but I think the what we've noticed is, you know, being able to hold the space for them and really sort of give them the ability to kind of ask themselves these questions, but also there's, you know, that balance between like this like eternal cheerleader that's like, yeah, that's a great idea, but also balancing that out with, you know, a little bit of that realistic, I guess the mirror, you know, to say, well, yes, but tell me a bit more about, you know, how that would happen, or, you know, what are the kind of positives and negatives, or what are the kind of advantages and disadvantages, is kind of, I think, something that has been really, really helpful, just because, as you said, you know, as individuals, when we're navigating through this, it can be really hard because you kind of almost start to like talk to yourself. And so, you know, being able to have, you know, somebody else that can bounce these ideas with you, but in a non-judgmental way, I think that's been a really big sort of value, like feedback that we've gotten from researchers that we coach with, is being able to show up in these conversations, being non-judgmental, is really kind of quite difficult to find, you know, sort of, you know, friends, colleagues, relatives who can do that. I'm not sure that resonates.
I know, it's very like, if someone's your friend or family, they're invested. Like they can't do the impartial thing. Not really.
So I guess maybe the last question is mindful of time. I mean, I think we've been sort of talking about sort of your, you know, it's very much kind of very appreciative of how you've been so forthright and authentic about, you know, really sharing some of the challenges and you know, sort of insights that you've gained about, you know, sort of navigating and sitting in uncertainty. Why don't we talk about this? You know, as you said, you know, why is it that we often this conversations only happens when the mic is closed?
I'm curious what other people think as well, because like I'm uncomfortable right now, but the world will go on. I haven't said anything like flammable about anyone. Like you can have this conversation without, you know, being, yeah, like I don't think I will have burnt my future boats, but I like to think that like a lot of things that we have historically been uncomfortable talking about as a society, the more that we can do it, the more that we'll be like, oh, actually that wasn't really necessary. Like it's the uncertainty is something that everyone will experience at some point. The extent to which you get to investigate it will be highly dependent on like your family situation, your financial situation, all that, like the global economic situation, etc. But why don't we do it more? Why do we just sort of like push through and grind? I'm curious if you have an answer, because I sort of feel like it's just that we're a little bit prudish about being uncertain, but don't know.
I think when I think about it, I think there's two things that I notice. One, exactly as it, like the muscle that we have to deal with uncertainty, to talk about uncertainty. It's not really something that we've sort of trained or, you know, sort of, you know, gone to many gym sessions to build that strength. All right. So I think there is that element of that it's just foreign. Like it's not something that we exercise a lot. And I think historically, you know, if you think about just the human kind of history, we really haven't had to deal with that much, like just the frequency and the volume of change and uncertainty. Whereas now it's just so much more that we're dealing with. So I wonder if part of it is a little bit of that historical. We didn't really have to do that until now. So we're sort of rapidly trying to grow our kind of muscles to do that. And then I think that element around like that social and cultural expectations, the social and cultural norms as well. Again, I'm curious. I mean, my background is Asian, and I just want to add in like a little bit of that or my kind of personal kind of history is, I think particularly for, at least certainly in my experience, you know, in the Asian culture, certainty and structure is like, you know, like knowing exactly what you want to do, getting a job for life, you know, like ideally you never get fired, you just get one role and, you know, you stay there for the rest of your life until you retire. That is, you know, very much like the, you know, if you can do that, you get A+, right? You're recognized across your family and relatives. You're pointed to as like, hey, look, everybody should follow that. So I think there is also a big kind of cultural foundation that also sits behind this. I don't know if that sort of resonates or.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, isn't it? Like on top of that, like to add to the stereotype of, you know, lots of young Asians being encouraged to be doctors. Something that I've observed amongst doctors is that career isn't anywhere near as stable as like they thought. And so parents are giving advice to be lawyer, doctor, maybe an accountant. Like doctors are often, and I'm not talking about like just GPs, I'm also talking about specialists, like really high level, not necessarily on longer than a year contract either. And so I think that disconnect often, like I've seen that really break people when they've been raised thinking that they are choosing a safe path and they've worked their absolute butt off to be there, and then it turns out that they don't have a job. And I think that disconnect can be like doubly crippling, because you're really smart, you've worked really hard, you've been raised by your parents believing that you were doing the right thing, and then you have been slapped in the face by that career. And I mean, I don't know how you support them. Doctors have like a whole pile of other issues. I think it's really like there's a layer of that as well, of like some of us have gone out and picked careers that we kind of knew were unstable. Like, good job for the artists and writers out there who knew it was unstable, went for it and did it anyhow. But, you know, I was told that STEM, I'd have a job, and I couldn't get a job with a science degree. And so, like, I think there's an extra challenge in there of like what we were told versus what happens, and that disconnect is like a horrible, and seeing it happen to people is just horrible.
I definitely kind of want to double click on that, in terms of that the expectations that you then had, and how you know, and it became really kind of daunting to sort of then you almost kind of feel like you have to like put forth the case, what, like, you know, why, you know, everybody else seems to get
get
it, and then it's not me, you know. Then, you know, there's also that extra pressure as well, which I think it adds to the kind of why we really shy away from talking about uncertainty, and also why it's so easy for us to kind of just jump into the next thing. That, and it's almost like just say yes to the next person who invites you to a dance party. It doesn't matter who they are. It's like,
yep.
And then, you know, you're like 2 minutes into the dance and you're like, why did I do that?
Yes. Oh, there's so many good analogies. Yeah.
So I'm just thinking, like, how do we now start to wrap the conversation up and kind of close this out? I guess, you know, maybe the kind of final reflection question is, you know, for you, Amelia, right in the thick of the spaghetti and the kind of, you know, uncertainty, if there are others that are kind of, you know, in this situation like you, you know, what would you sort of, you know, how would you have a conversation? How would you start a conversation with somebody like that?
I don't know how I would start, because that's always awkward. But I think if I ask someone, like, what do you do? And then they respond with, I'm currently between roles, I would try and encourage others to respond with slightly enthusiastic curiosity, right? Like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, you know, what sort of things are you exploring? Like, have you had any cool ideas that were interesting lately? Like, you know, do you need any support, or like, are you happy just like noodling around? I think there's sort of the idea at the moment of, you know, if someone comes to you upset, do you ask them like, do you need space? Do you want advice, or like, do you want a hug or sort of support? And I think giving people options of like, do you want to talk about that, or do you want to talk about like the TV show you've watched most recently, because they might just be over talking about it. And I think giving people options and being like optimistically curious, that's what I'd like to be greeted with. I would encourage you to do the same, I reckon.
Beautiful. Nice. Love it. I think that's a fantastic ending.
But that's not the actual ending. Is there anything that you like that has bubbled up for you that you'd like to chip in or add now?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think I just want to kind of riff on what you talked about, which is, you know, I think there's so much opportunity for each of us, whether or not you're, you know, in this kind of uncertainty yourself, or you come across friends that are, you know, in between roles and they're really thinking about where to next, is to sort of start with a really curious question, you know, and really start with, oh, that's really interesting, tell me more about it. And you know, it can be quite amazing to what I kind of often say, like, you know, not jump into the firefighter mode, and, you know, start with a open question and see where that conversation goes. And that would be kind of, I think, what really kind of resonated for our conversation is actually the best way to support, you know, us as individuals and others is to have that open mind and to have that curiosity and to be kind of, you know, guided by what could come up in conversations and in discussions, and to trust yourself that, you know, things will work out and it's okay that you're going to have ups and downs just like every other, you know, day and career that you might have.
Yeah. Love it. To wrap up, do you have a shout out for us, a virtual high five for someone or someone you think is doing an awesome job?
It's always like, yes, even though you did ask me that question. If I can, I would probably, yeah, I mean, this is kind of me being super, super kind of selfish, and I want to do a virtual high five to Jonathan, who is the co-founder of Cruxes Innovation, because, yeah, our partnership, you know, really the organization would not exist without him and his contributions. And, you know, this year has been extra kind of, you know, challenging. Obviously, there's a lot of change happening in the research sector, the higher education sector, and, you know, I think I've just been super appreciative in the way that sort of he shows up every day, you know, adding that extra sort of enthusiasm, that passion. And I think it's so lucky that, you know, sort of I get to sort of work alongside people who generally, you know, want to be there. And it rubs off, right? So, yeah.
Love it. Okay. Well, high five, Jonathan. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Emily, and asking some excellent questions that really got me thinking. It was awesome.
Fantastic. I'm that was so much fun.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, please pass it on to someone else who you think might enjoy it as well. And if you want to support Avid Research this year, that would be amazing. You can buy us a coffee, head to avidresearch.com.au and there'll be a link, buy me a coffee, and you can support us with a one-off little coffee payment. Thanks so much for listening. You're a legend.